Yasmina Khadra's new novel is set in that time just 2 years ago when the women of Kabul were locked gloomily inside their houses, in burqas, like wingless blue birds. It was the time of the Taliban, of public executions, mass graves, and an entire country imprisoned after years of warlords and occupation. Atik is a jailer who watches over those condemned to death. His wife is condemned to her own suffering. Mohsen is a successful businessman whose wife is chafing with grief over the loss of a life of her own. Yasmina Khadra is actually the pen name for a former Algerian army officer who's now retired to the south of France and the author of two previous novels. His new book is called The Swallows of Kabul. And Yasmina Khadra, as he is known, now joins us from Aix-en-Provence, France. Do I say Miss or Ms. Khadra? Thanks very much for being with us.
On m'appelle Monsieur Khadra.
They call me Mr. Khadra.
All right. Our interpreter is Susanna Echeverri. Mr. Khadra, why did you write under a pen name and a woman's pen name?
It's very simple. I spent 36 years of my life in the army. I started writing under my real name while I was an officer, which really displeased the military hierarchy. And in 1989, the military censored me. So I stopped writing under my real name, and my wife suggested that I write under a pen name. My wife gave me an extraordinary gift. She told me, "You gave me your name for my life, and I'm giving you my name for your posterity." And since that time, I have taken the name Yasmina Khadra in part as out of respect for this extraordinary woman and also out of the respect for women in general. And I'm completely aware of the challenge that I throw out there, especially in the Arab world, with a man taking on the name of a woman. It is very unheard of.
Help us understand that special challenge of taking on a woman's name, please.
It's a challenge because in the Muslim world, women have always been at the bottom of society. They've always been subhuman. And I think that a woman is a partner of a man, and if he can't learn to live with respecting that partner, then he can't live fully and he can't live right. And I would like to invite you to look to see where a lot of countries where there's a lot of pain and suffering, those are the countries where women are treated badly.
Your book has just been published in English. It received rapturous reviews in France. I'm wondering if it's being published in any of the languages of the Arab world.
You'll be surprised to know that I've been published in 14 countries, and only one of those countries is an Arab country. Most Arab countries don't want to hear any talk of me.
What drew you to write about Afghanistan?
First of all, it was a big relief for me to be able to write about it. I especially wanted to be able to talk about Algerians in Afghanistan. I don't know if most people know, but a lot of Algerians fought in the Afghan war against the Soviet Union. So it was a relief for me to be able to write about that.
You have a vivid and moving description of a stoning. One of your principal characters, Mohsen, who we infer, as the reader seems to be a nice person, joins in this stoning. I'll read a brief section. The mullah raises an imperious hand. After reciting a verse from the Koran, he reads something that sounds like a judgment, returns the sheet of paper to an interior pocket of his vest, and at the end of a brief meditation proposes that his listeners arm themselves with stones. This is the signal. In an indescribable frenzy, the crowd rushes to the heaps of rocks placed in the square a few hours earlier for this very purpose. At once a hail of projectiles falls upon the condemned woman, who, since she has been gagged, shivers under their impact without a cry. Mohsen picks up three stones and throws them at the target. Because of the tumult around him, the first two go astray, but on the third try, he hits the victim flush on the head. In an access of unfathomable joy, he sees a red stain blossom at the spot where his stone has struck her. What leads someone to participate in a stoning?
What that passage really speaks to is the reduction of the human condition. Human beings are frail and fragile, and Mohsen is depicted as a fragile human being who can easily be swayed by mob hysteria and can be transformed into a simple grain of sand in the wake of a terrible storm. This is the essence of what is the problem in the world today. We're all fragile human beings who can easily be swept away by events that are greater than us.
You believe that fundamentalist movements, how do they appeal to people in your experience?
I think the motivation behind fundamentalism is the renouncement of life. It's those who have no more hope, who have no more motivation, who have no more reason to live, those who are marginalized and set aside in society. They learn how to hate the happiness of others and resent the happiness of others. That's where the foundation of fundamentalism starts. It motivates them to take revenge on the world. And I fought a great deal against fundamentalism in my country, and I continue to fight against it. And I wanted to bring to the world a vision of how we continue to be fragile in light of these kinds of movements.
I want to ask you about another section where you have a character named Mullah Bashir who delivers a speech in behalf of fundamentalism that, well, let me just put it this way. I want to read a few sentences. By the end of the speech, I could understand why people would sign up with this man's spiritual army. Let me read a few sentences, if we can, for the benefit of our listeners. Mullah Bashir drums on the floor, demanding close attention. Henceforth, he said, there is no doubt the word of righteousness resounds in the four corners of the earth. The Muslim peoples are gathering their forces and their most deeply held convictions. Brandishing the Quran, he cries out, this! The West has perished. It no longer exists. It proposed a model to fools, and that model has failed. What is that model? Exactly what kind of emancipation does it offer up? What does it consider modern? The amoral societies it has set up, where profit takes precedence over all else, where scruples, piety, and charity count for nothing, where values are exclusively financial, where the rich become tyrants and the wage earners slaves, where women willingly give themselves over to vice, where men marry one another, where bodies are sold and bought openly for all to see without provoking the least reaction, the Lord cannot be impressed. Even though our radar may fail to detect stealth bombers, nothing escapes the eyes of the Lord. His fist violently strikes the floor, and who would dare to measure himself against the Lord's wrath? That's a very compelling speech.
You know, the world is run by rhetoric and by orators. People are not animals. They're not inanimate objects. People are moved by strong words. They can listen attentively. Mullahs have that power. Mullahs have been able to use words that have incited people. It's a kind of verbal hypnosis. I myself have heard these mullahs, and I've been fascinated by the way they've been able to use words to light fires in people and cause people to take up arms and to react incredibly strongly.
For a speech like that to compel or inflame anyone, does it have to contain some truth?
Absolutely, yes. These are very intelligent people that take a grain of truth and put it in a whole sea of lies. And with their power, they're able to carry the whole sea of lies with just that one grain of truth. It's also these people that need to point out the weaknesses and the mistakes of others to be able to carry their message and their cause even further.
Each of your characters in this book confronts a moment in which they have to find personal courage. How does anyone find that courage when they know that death can be the cost of it?
These people have no choice. They have to do it. They have to either die or survive by any means. The country is devastated. It's a combat zone. It's a constant struggle for survival. And I think that this proves that man, in any situation, despite his nightmares, despite his delirium, is always trying to chase after that faint light of survival. The thing that worsens this quest is that every man is completely isolated from each other. And this is what I try to depict in my novel, the complete desolation and isolation of man and his quest for survival completely alone.
Monsieur Kadra, what made you, an Algerian army officer, start becoming a novelist?
La question est toute simple. Moi, j'étais soldat à l'âge de 9 ans.
I was 9 years old when I first went into the army. As a 9-year-old child, you can't say no to your father, a father who wants you to start a career in the army. I had a hard time accepting that fate, and I wanted to desert the world that was forced upon me, so books became my escape. And I ended up writing my first novel by the age of 17.
You were in the Algerian army when you were 9? What does a 9-year-old do in the army?
Vous savez, après la guerre franco-algérienne pour l'indépendance de mon pays.
After the War of Independence of Algeria from France, there were a lot of orphans in the street of Algeria, and there were so many orphans that the government established military schools for these orphans, and a lot of military officers wanted to send their kids there. So all of us who were in this school were officers in training, military officers in training.
Do you feel that you were a writer who went into the military rather than a soldier who became a writer?
Moi, je pense avoir été écrivain avant d'être militaire.
I think I was a writer before I was ever an army officer.
J'ai écrit un récit autobiographique dans lequel je disais que j'étais né.
In one of my novels, in one of my biographic novels, I wrote that I was born a poet. Like a bird is born a musician.
Mr. Kadra, thank you very much.
Merci beaucoup.
Yasmin Kadra is speaking with us from Aix-en-Provence, France. His novel, The Swallows of Kabul, has just been translated from French into English. Our interpreter was Susanna Chiveri. You can read an excerpt of The Swallows of Kabul at our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.